people who know you and know of you, of course, are aware that you were born in 1922 in Paris, yes. And that you were part of, I guess we would call it a British enclave. Would that be the correct way to say it? You lived in a British enclave in Paris?
They spoke English because they were international, but they came from all kinds of different bloodlines through many centuries over Europe. And Paris was the capital back then for the international scene, so it was best to be in Paris, and that's where they were. But we spoke English in the home, and I was part of a family of servants for the people.
Now, when you say servants, it kind of just hides the fact of the level of importance that your family actually did play. Your family goes back over 300 years in that particular line of work, correct?
Yes. You know, have you seen the TV series Downton Abbey?
I absolutely have.
So yeah. You've seen the part after World War One?
Yes.
And that's my past. You know the dumb kid, the one who goes to war, and what, he gets shot? And that's me. I mean, you know, just an average kid trying to get by in the situation there. But I cite that to show what one can do, because I became a lot more aware later as it unfolded. So that's the world we lived in. It was dying after World War One, which was really interesting. And that's where life got really interesting for my father and I. My father being the main butler, he'd be like the guy, remember the guy, the serious leader of the butlers, of the servants?
Yes, the head of the household, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way my father was. He was a respectable, you know, sober guy, proud of his family, what they've done in serving those one or two families. And yet things were changing. Many of these oligarchies suffered after World War One. They lost a lot, and especially with the collapse of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire and the network that was part of. So my father was brought into levels of working for his master that he'd never been part of. And that's in the 1920s, and that's when he met all these interesting characters that are mentioned in my diary. And then I, you know, happened to be around and meet some of myself, but he was an ascetic. He probably would have been an artist if he wasn't a butler or something. You know, he was an intellectual in his own private interests. He got to meet all these people because his employers were interested in what was going on in the world. They hadn't been interested for a couple hundred years. They didn't have to be. They were rather, complacent? Isolated, complacent, and everything's going great. Now everything was up for grabs, so they had to start looking around. And they were interested in what new minds were doing, like the scientists around Einstein, the artists around Picasso and Duchamp and that. You'll see that Peggy Guggenheim is over there at that time in the 20s.
Yes.
You know, many of the American oligarchy kids know something's up, and they want to be on the scene. So James Joyce and Duchamp and these people, they met all kinds of people through all levels of society, and my father was in the mix of that.
Your father, even though we would term him as being a domestic, actually, in a sense, kind of became what we today define as an intelligence officer. He became sort of a liaison between the outside world and the families that you served.
Yeah, you could call it the outreach. Since the oligarchs were getting more nervous in the 20s and 30s, they had to start talking to people. They had to deal with the turnover of political dynasties. You know, the fascists come in, the Nazis, everything's topsy-turvy. The advantage of the oligarchy, which I call the Priory of Sion, because they are talked about in the 50s and 60s with Pierre Plantard's droppings in the bibliotheque, or wherever he put them in Paris, the things that were found later in the Holy Blood, Holy Grail books. They didn't call themselves a Priory of Sion at the time, but they had privy to some of the information that was later attributed to them. So it was a lot of disinformation, a lot of semi-fact, fiction, all mixed up, part of making their group be charismatic, because they had to try to create some kind of awe. So that's part and parcel of the confusion of the time. So they didn't loan money. They invested, his employers. Whereas the Rockefellers started to loan money all around the world, say, after World War II. And that left them vulnerable in the 70s. But the oligarchies of Europe, at least the ones that I knew about, they just invested. So they're always interested from a comfortable position. I mean, they didn't have to make any more money. They could survive on their interests and all the stuff they had, but they wanted to know what was happening in science and pharmacy and everything that was going on. So my father would go around and meet these people, introduce them, whatever they heard about. And so we actually with my father, went to Hoffman's lab in 1943 and actually were there the week that he took the acid, even though we didn't know anything that was going to happen. April 19th or 16th, 19th or something. We actually visited that week because there was lots of talk around the Sandoz company about what they were up to, what they were trying to experiment, and my father's employers knew about it. They wanted to see what they could find out. And they always had the charisma that, well, okay, so, Mr. Dobbs, you want to look at our lab, and you were interested in investing? Yes, we might want to invest in you. You know what I mean? They had the charisma and the open door of giving some money to the scene, or not lending, but just adding supplements, something that looks auspicious, that something's going to happen. So I got to meet or be around these scenes, and that's how I met a lot of people. And I didn't fully understand what the hell was going on. You know, I'm just that dumb kid. But in retrospect, I took in a lot of stuff, and it helped later. And then my father was a good guide, too, when things really got crazy after Sputnik went up in 1957. I mean, I could go on for hours about it, but that's where I came from.
In the information that you have up on your timeline on 5body.com, it sounds like your father had somewhat of a metaphysical background as well. Is that true?
Yes, that's what I meant by him being an artist and intellectual. He was self-taught, and what I became what's called an autodidact, self-educated. I mean, he just had a very, very good mind. So because he was able to get out and about in the 20s working for his boss, then he was able to have an excuse to mingle with people that he wanted to mingle, but he couldn't have before World War I because he had to do his work. I mean, that guy, the head guy, I don't have his name handy, in Downton Abbey, he's running a show there. He's sneaking off. I remember him sneaking off. You know, he's taking really a lot of responsibility running the house to make sure everything's perfect. The bow ties are tied. The linen is in the proper place. But that was before World War I. After that, he got out a little more. You know, that old line, you should get out more. Well, he got out.
I'm curious about the role that psychics, clairvoyants, and other type of mystics played in the, I guess you would call it the Victorian world, the world before and maybe a little after World War I. Were the elites at that time making use of psychics and other types of mystical people?
All the time. All the major dynasties, going back to Pharaoh, were people that were ascending in Ion's terms, were getting godlike qualities. They could go to parallel worlds. That's how they got their power. There are parallel world economies. They bring gold over from other worlds. All the big families could do it. I mean, the Rockefellers knew there was a big portal right on Battery Park where the World Trade Center is, that area. The point is that is the secret part. It's not that they would dabble with the Ouija board or get some psychic like Rasputin or somebody else. They knew more than the psychics, so to speak, at least the leaders of the family. That's how they got their power. I mean, they could run a show for 500 years because the locals didn't know.
But these were what we would call today bloodline families that went back, I guess, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 years. Is that correct?
Some of them, not everybody. It is not wise to say this family went 1,000 years and they go way back because they get toppled. They end up poverty stricken for a couple hundred years and they get back into the power again. And I have to stress this. The idea of bloodlines is only a particular to certain families that were lucky or continuous for whatever reason. But a lot of the ones that had the power lost it. And then they had to get it back, and they'd start over. So it is an interesting question, and we've done a lot on the bloodlines in our rewrite course, which was all those that bought the Book of Revelation 23-chapter series. Once they'd done that, we were able to be part of this postgraduate thing, which we refer to as the rewrite group. Ion told us not to discuss it outside of the group, so we have to keep that relatively to ourselves at this point. But there is information, and if you ever had a private session with Ion, and when Ion is available again, you can ask these questions.
Yeah, this whole idea of taking back your power has to do with getting away from that mindset and understanding who we are as individuals.
Yeah. What I call the chip body, and before that, the TV landscape, modern electric media, and this is what James Joyce and the vorticist artists predicted, it would disrupt all this principality agglutination that bloodlines and other oligarchies had developed. Like I said, they got weakened after World War One. They got even worse after World War Two. They were never brought back in again until the 80s when the Rockefellers went bankrupt on the global level because of, again, computerized economy sped things up beyond chemical body management control. So Prince Charles and the gang came in the 80s, but they eventually got wiped out in the 90s because nobody could deal with the virtual reality, the virtual economy of the Android meme or the chip economy after 1995. So to focus on chemical body power structures, one of the main messages of me for years and Ion now is it's wide open now because those guys, if they regain control, they wouldn't even know what control they had anymore. This is the big news.